Obviously, if the archetypes determine our mental behavior, they must appear in all these fields. But unexpectedly, Jung's concepts have also opened up new ways of looking at things in the realm of the natural sciences as well, for instance, in biology. The physicist Wolfgang Pauli has pointed out that due to new discoveries, our idea of the evolution of life requires a revision that might take into account an area of interrelation between the unconscious psyche and biological processes. Until recently, it was assumed that the mutation of species happened at random, and that a selection took place by means of which the meaningful, well-adapted varieties survived and the others disappeared. But modern evolutionists have pointed out that the selections of such mutations by pure chance would have taken much longer than the known age of our planet allows. Jung's concept of synchronicity may be helpful here, for it could throw light upon the occurrence of certain rare border phenomena or exceptional events. Thus, it might explain how meaningful adaptations and mutations could happen in less time than that required by entirely random mutations. Today, we know of many instances in which meaningful chance events have occurred when an archetype is activated. For example, the history of science contains many cases of simultaneous invention or discovery. One of the most famous of such cases involved Darwin and his theory of the origin of species. Darwin had developed the theory in a lengthy essay, and in 1844 was busy expanding this into a major treatise. While he was at work on this project, he received a manuscript from a young biologist, unknown to Darwin, named A.R. Wallace. The manuscript was a shorter but otherwise parallel exposition of Darwin's theory. At the time, Wallace was in the Molucca Islands of the Malay Archipelago. He knew of Darwin as a naturalist, but had not the slightest idea of the kind of theoretical work on which Darwin was at the time engaged. In each case, a creative scientist had independently arrived at a hypothesis that was to change the entire development of the science, and each had initially conceived of the hypothesis in an intuitive flash, later backed up by documentary evidence. The archetypes thus seemed to appear as the agents, so to speak, of a creatio continua. What Jung calls synchronistic events are in fact something like acts of creation in time. Similar meaningful coincidences can be said to occur when there is a vital necessity for an individual to know about, say, a relative's death or some lost possession. In a great many cases, such information has been revealed by means of extrasensory perception. This seems to suggest that abnormal random phenomena may occur when a vital need or urge is aroused. And this in turn might explain why a species of animals under great pressure or in great need could produce meaningful but acausal changes in its outer material structure. But the most promising field for future studies seems, as Jung saw it, to have unexpectedly opened up in connection with the complex field of microphysics. At first sight, it seems most unlikely that we should find a relationship between psychology and microphysics. The interrelation of these sciences is worth some explanation. The most obvious aspect of such a connection lies in the fact that most of the basic concepts of physics, such as space, time, matter, energy, continuum, or field, particle, etc., were originally intuitive, semi-mythological, archetypal ideas of the old Greek philosophers, ideas that then slowly evolved and became more accurate, and that today are mainly expressed in abstract mathematical terms. The idea of a particle, for instance, was formulated by the 4th century BC Greek philosopher Leucippus and his pupil Democritus, who called it the atom, that is, the indivisible unit. Though the atom has not proved indivisible, we still conceive matter ultimately as consisting of waves and particles, or discontinuous quanta. The idea of energy and its relationship to force and movement was also formulated by early Greek thinkers and was developed by Stoic philosophers. They postulated the existence of a sort of life-giving tension, tonos, which supports and moves all things. This is obviously a semi-mythological germ of our modern concept of energy. Even comparatively modern scientists and thinkers have relied on half-mythological archetypal images when building up new concepts. In the 17th century, for instance, the absolute validity of the law of causality seemed proved to René Descartes by the fact that God is immutable in his decisions and actions. And the great German astronomer Johannes Kepler asserted that there are not more and not less than three dimensions of space on account of the Trinity. These are just two examples among many that show how even our modern and basic scientific concepts remained for a long time linked with archetypal ideas that originally came from the unconscious. They do not necessarily express objective facts, or at least we cannot prove that they ultimately do, but spring from innate mental tendencies in man, tendencies that induce him to find satisfactory rational explanatory connections between the various outer and inner facts with which he has to deal. When examining nature and the universe, instead of looking for and finding objective qualities, man encounters himself, in the phrase of the physicist Werner Heisenberg. Because of the implications of this point of view, Wolfgang Pauli and other scientists have begun to study the role of archetypal symbolism in the realm of scientific concepts. Pauli believed that we should parallel our investigation of outer objects with a psychological investigation of the inner origin of our scientific concepts. This investigation might shed new light on a far-reaching concept to be introduced later in this chapter, the concept of a oneness between the physical and psychological spheres, quantitative and qualitative aspects of reality. Besides this rather obvious link between the psychology of the unconscious and physics, there are other even more fascinating connections. Jung, working closely with Pauli, discovered that analytical psychology has been forced by investigations in its own field to create concepts that turned out later to be strikingly similar to those created by the physicists when confronted with microphysical phenomena. One of the most important among the physicists' concepts is Niels Bohr's idea of complementarity. Modern microphysics has discovered that one can describe light only by means of two logically opposed but complementary concepts, the ideas of particle and wave. In grossly simplified terms, it might be said that under certain experimental conditions, light manifests itself as if it were composed of particles. Under others, as if it were a wave. Also, it was discovered that we can accurately observe either the position or the velocity of a subatomic particle, but not both at once. The observer must choose his experimental setup, but by doing so he excludes, or rather must sacrifice, some other possible setup and its results. Furthermore, the measuring apparatus has to be included in the description of events, because it has a decisive but uncontrollable influence upon the experimental setup. Pauli says, "The science of microphysics, on account of the basic complementary situation, is faced with the impossibility of eliminating the effects of the observer by determinable correctives, and has therefore to abandon in principle any objective understanding of physical phenomena. Where classical physics still saw determined causal natural laws of nature, we now look only for statistical laws with primary possibilities. In other words, in microphysics, the observer interferes with the experiment in a way that cannot be measured and that therefore cannot be eliminated. No natural laws can be formulated saying such and such will happen in every case. All the microphysicist can say is such and such is, according to statistical probability, likely to happen." This naturally represents a tremendous problem for our classical physical thinking. It requires a consideration in a scientific experiment of the mental outlook of the participant observer. It could thus be said that scientists can no longer hope to describe any aspects of outer objects in a completely objective manner. Most modern physicists have accepted the fact that the role played by the conscious ideas of an observer in every microphysical experiment cannot be eliminated. But they have not concerned themselves with the possibility that the total psychological condition, both conscious and unconscious, of the observer might play a role as well. As Pauli points out, however, we have at least no a priori reasons for rejecting this possibility. But we must look at this as a still unanswered and an unexplored problem. Bohr's idea of complementarity is especially interesting to Jungian psychologists, for Jung saw that the relationship between the conscious and unconscious mind also forms a complementary pair of opposites. Each new content that comes up from the unconscious is altered in its basic nature by being partly integrated into the conscious mind of the observer. Even dream contents, if noticed at all, are in that way semi-conscious, and each enlargement of the observer's consciousness caused by dream interpretation has again an immeasurable repercussion and influence on the unconscious. Thus the unconscious can only be approximately described, like the particles of microphysics, by paradoxical concepts. What it really is in itself we shall never know, just as we shall never know this about matter. To take the parallels between psychology and microphysics even further, what Jung calls the archetypes, or patterns of emotional and mental behavior in man, could just as well be called, to use Pauli's term, primary possibilities of psychic reactions. As has been stressed in this book, there are no laws governing the specific form in which an archetype might appear. There are only tendencies, see Part 1, that again enable us to say only that such and such is likely to happen in certain psychological situations. As the American psychologist William James once pointed out, the idea of an unconscious could itself be compared to the field concept in physics. We might say that just as in a magnetic field the particles entering into it appear in a certain order, psychological contents also appear in an ordered way within that psychic area which we call the unconscious. If we call something rational or meaningful in our conscious mind and accept it as a satisfactory explanation of things, it is probably due to the fact that our conscious explanation is in harmony with some preconscious constellation of contents in our unconscious. In other words, our conscious representations are sometimes ordered, or arranged in a pattern, before they have become conscious to us. The 19th century German mathematician Carl Friedrich Gauss gives an example of an experience of such an unconscious order of ideas. He says that he found a certain rule in the theory of numbers, not by painstaking research, but by the grace of God, so to speak. The riddle solved itself as lightning strikes, and I myself could not tell or show the connection between what I knew before, what I last used to experiment with, and what produced the final success. The French scientist Henri Poincaré is even more explicit about this phenomenon. He describes how during a sleepless night he actually watched his mathematical representations colliding in him until some of them found a more stable connection. One feels as if one could watch one's own unconscious at work, the unconscious activity partially becoming manifest to consciousness without losing its own character. At such moments, one has an intuition of the difference between the mechanisms of the two egos. As a final example of parallel developments in microphysics and psychology, we can consider Jung's concept of meaning. Where before men looked for causal, that is, rational explanations of phenomena, Jung introduced the idea of looking for the meaning, or perhaps we could say the purpose. That is, rather than ask why something happened, that is, what caused it, Jung asked, what did it happen for? This same tendency appears in physics. Many modern physicists are now looking more for connections in nature than for causal laws, determinism. Pauli expected that the idea of the unconscious would spread beyond the narrow frame of therapeutic use and would influence all natural sciences that deal with general life phenomena. Since Pauli suggested this development, he has been echoed by some physicists who are concerned with the new science of cybernetics, the comparative study of the control system formed by the brain and nervous system, and such mechanical or electronic information and control systems as computers. In short, as the modern French scientist Olivier Costa de Beauregard has put it, science and psychology should in future enter into an active dialogue. The unexpected parallelisms of ideas in psychology and physics suggest, as Jung pointed out, a possible ultimate oneness of both fields of reality that physics and psychology study, that is, a psychophysical oneness of all life phenomena. Jung was even convinced that what he calls the unconscious somehow links up with the structure of inorganic matter, a link to which the problem of so-called psychosomatic illness seems to point. The concept of a unitarian idea of reality, which has been followed up by Pauli and Erich Neumann, was called by Jung the unus mundus, the one world, within which matter and psyche are not yet discriminated or separately actualized. He paved the way toward such a Unitarian point of view by pointing out that an archetype shows a psychoid, that is, not purely psychic, but almost material aspect, when it appears within a synchronistic event. For such an event is in effect a meaningful arrangement of inner psychic and outer facts. Note, Jung's idea of the unus mundus follows some medieval philosophic ideas in scholasticism, John Duns Scotus, etc. The unus mundus was the total or archetypal concept of the world in God's mind before he put it into actual reality. End of note. In other words, the archetypes not only fit into outer situations, as animal patterns of behavior fit into their surrounding nature, at bottom, they tend to become manifest in a synchronistic arrangement that includes both matter and psyche. But these statements are just hints at some directions in which the investigation of life phenomena might proceed. Jung felt that we should first learn a great deal more about the interrelation of these two areas, matter and psyche, before rushing into too many abstract speculations about it. The field that Jung himself felt would be most fruitful for further investigations was the study of our basic mathematical axiomata, which Pauli calls primary mathematical intuitions, and among which he especially mentions the ideas of an infinite series of numbers in arithmetic, or of a continuum in geometry, etc. As the German-born author Hannah Arendt has said, with the rise of modernity, mathematics do not simply enlarge their content or reach out into the infinite to become applicable to the immensity of an infinite and infinitely growing, expanding universe, but cease to be concerned with appearance at all. They are no longer the beginnings of philosophy or the science of being in its true appearance, but become instead the science of the structure of the human mind. A Jungian would at once add the question, which mind? The conscious or the unconscious mind. As we have seen with reference to the experiences of Gauss and Poincaré, the mathematicians also discovered the fact that our representations are ordered before we become aware of them. B. L. von der Werden, who cites many examples of essential mathematical insights arising from the unconscious, concludes, "The unconscious is not only able to associate and combine, but even to judge. The judgment of the unconscious is an intuitive one, but it is under favorable circumstances completely sure." Among the many mathematical primary intuitions or a priori ideas, the natural numbers seem psychologically the most interesting. Not only do they serve our conscious every